Good morning, everybody. Our last shiur really was about one word. We talked about the name Yerushalayim, and that was in connection with Perek chapter 10 in Yehoshua, where Melech Yerushalayim Adon Tzedek, the king of Yerushalayim, brings together another four kings, a total of five kings, who go to war against Yehoshua. And as we described, this is one of the two major campaigns that Yehoshua must wage. The first is against the five kings of the south, led by Adoni Tzedek, the king of Yerushalayim. In chapter 11, begins with, and if you go to chapter 11, we will a few words will be said as I take you through. I hope that we're going to get to chapters 20 and 21 today. If we do it, that's going to be a great accomplishment. No mean accomplishment. At the beginning of chapter 11, it says, "Vayihi kishmoa Yavin melech Hatzor," when Yavin, the king of Hatzor, heard, he sent to Yovav, the king of Madon, to the king of Shimron, to the king of Akshaf, the El Hamalachim, and to the kings Ashem Yitzpon, that are to the north, Bahar, Barava, Negev Kinrot, to the south of Kinneret, Uvashvela, Uvenafodor Miyam. What takes place over here is the second major campaign, and this is against the kings of the north. And after that battle is completed, for all intents and purposes, most of Eretz Yisrael is now in the hands of Yahushua. Yahushua has two major tasks that he must complete successfully, and they are kibush, conquest of the land, and then to divide the land amongst the tribes of Israel. In chapter 11, the campaign against the kings of the north. Chapter 12 is a listing of the 31 kings that were defeated by Yehoshua. According to the Navi and to Chazal, it's quite clear that the battles for the conquest of Eretz Yisrael took a period of 7 years, and then there are another 7 years during which Yehoshua is going to divide the land amongst the tribes of Israel. In chapter 13, we're moving. In chapter 13, at its very beginning, it says, "V'Yehoshua zaken ba bayamim." Yehoshua grew old, ba bayamim, he had come in days. That's only said about two other people in all of Tanakh. Right, we got them both. David, Bahamelech David, Zakein, Baba Yamim. Where are we going to have that? Excellent. Very good. The Haftarah of Parsha Payachin, this Shabbos, Bahamelech David, Zakein, Baba Yamim. It is also said with regard to Avraham in Parshat Chaye Sarah. It says it about Avraham, the Avraham, Zakein, Baba Yamim. So the three about whom it says, Zakein ba bayamim, are Avraham, Yehoshua, and David. What is the meaning of Zakein and ba bayamim? What's the difference between Zakein and ba bayamim? Old ba bayamim, come in days. What does it mean? So there are some who say that hopefully everybody grows old. Question is, what has one done with one's life? Avraham, Yahushua, and David were able to come to the end of their days. They came with all of their days in hand. There is something that they had accomplished each day of their lives. That's the way in which one takes time and eternalizes it. Time is the most fleeting thing in all of creation. What a moment ago was the present is now the past. The beginning of this sentence that I said is already the past. We're looking to the future, and it keeps flowing and rushing. time continues to rush relentlessly on. So how does one take time and give it substance, make it eternal, make it last? The only way is by having accomplished something. If I studied or I've done something at a particular moment in time, that moment lives on forever. Avraham was zaken, he grew old, but boy, he came with all of the days of his life in hand. They were years of accomplishment, so that they had become eternalized. Vayomer Hashem Elav, and God says to him, this is the only place where we have God repeating, Atos Akanto, you have grown old, Batapa Yamin, you have come in your days, Vaha'oretz Nishara Harbe Miod Lirishta, and a great deal of the land still remains to be inherited, and God encourages him now to complete the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, of which he accomplishes most of it during the course of his lifetime, and then he begins to divide the land amongst the various tribes. Chapter 14 begins the description of how the land was divided, and there we, when the weather gets better, hopefully we'll have a field trip in order to really see the various parts of Eretz Yisrael. I hope we'll get it done. I mean, this is. I've already spoken to a number of people, but I don't want to take a chance on, during the winter. For all we know, it can rain. But when the weather gets better, we'll try and see the portions of Eretz Yisrael b'shetach, out in the field itself. There is a great deal that is written about how the land was divided. Beginning of chapter 14 says, "Ve'ela asher nochalu b'nei Yisrael be'eretz Kanaan." These are the people who caused the nachala, the inheritance, and the portions in Eretz Kanaan to be given to the children of Israel. Asher nichalu otam Elazar Hakohen v'Yehoshua bin Nun v'Roshei Avot Hamatot l'bnei Yisrael. It was Elazar the Kohen, Yehoshua bin Nun, and there were officers of each one of the tribes, and jointly they are the ones that decided who was going to receive a portion in the land. The land was divided al pi hagoral, by the drawing of lots, and according to the Urim v'Tumim, the lots, and here I say there are many opinions as to how the land was divided. The Malbim here in Tanakh says that what he seems to feel is the best way to approach the entire division of the land is that the Goral, in other words, what was decided by the drawing of lots? What was decided? What did the lots tell us? The Malbim brings a Raivad who says the following, that they took 24 pieces of paper. The land was divided into 12 areas. And then there were the names of 12 tribes. If we want to be more technical about it, it's really 9.5. Because 2.5 of the tribes had already received their portion on the east bank of the Jordan. 9.5 tribes are now going to receive their portion on the West Bank. So you have, we're going to talk about Levi. There are 13 tribes. After, in this week's Parsha, and there was a shir about that yesterday, after Yaakov divides Yosef in two and gives Yosef a double portion of Ephraim and Menashe, there are now a total of 13 tribes. But Levi is not going to receive a portion in the land. The land is divided in 12. And as we say, technically speaking, 2.5 tribes receive their portion on the east bank, 9.5 on the west bank, And what we really want to talk about is, I want to talk about Levi. That's really what I want to talk about today. The tribe of Levi does not receive a portion in the land. And in a few moments we'll talk about that. So what they did was, there were nine or ten betakin, and each one designated an area of Eretz Yisrael. And then you had the names of the tribes. Whoever pulled the goral out of the hat pulled out one with a name of a tribe, the other with an area of Eretz Yisrael, a geographic area. And that's the way they matched the tribe to the geographic area. Within the geographic area, they had to carve out a piece of land that would be in keeping with the size of the shevet. La Rav, the Torah says, a larger shevet, a larger tribe received a larger portion. A smaller tribe received a smaller portion. But that, according to the Ravid, was not decided on the basis of the Goral. It was not the Goral that decided that. That was decided by the people who sat down in order to work out a piece of land for each shevet and for each family. What the Goral decided was where? North, south, Negev, Shvelah, will it be Tzafon, Galil, what part of the Tzafon, near the Kinneret? That's how it was decided, yes. Yes. Yes.
Zvulun lechof yami.
Unless, of course, we will say, isn't it magnificent that Yaakov, no, not that it worked out, that Yaakov Avinu had Ruach HaKodesh. That Yaakov Avinu knew that it was going to work out that Zvulun would be along the coast. Now there's a lot of coast to be along, but he coasted along and he got a part of the coast. And Yaakov knew this, Beruach HaKodesh, many years before. Now I want to, as we keep going through these program, I want to point out a number of other things until we get to the two chapters that I really want to talk about, and they are chapters 20 and 21. Just follow me in chapter 14. We started chapter 14. Just here are a number of your questions answered. Chapter 14, pasuk 2. The goral nachalatam. The portion was decided by the lots. Kashet ziva Hashem biat Moshe, as God commanded Moshe, l'tishat hamatot v'chatzi hamateh, to 9.5 tribes. Kinatan Moshe, because Moshe had given shnei hamat nachalat shnei hamatot v'chatzi hamateh me'evel ayadin. Moshe had already given to 2.5 of the tribes their portion on the other side of the Jordan. V'la'leviim lo nakan nachala b'tocham, and to the Leviim he did not give them a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Ki hoyu b'nei Yosef, if we're talking about this week's Sedra, this is this week's Sedra. Ki hoyu b'nei Yosef shnei matot, because the sons of Yosef became two tribes, Menashe v'Ephraim. V'lo notnu chelet la'leviim b'aretz, no portion was given to the Leviim in the land. Ki im orim lo shevet, they were given cities in which to dwell, umigrashehem, a migrash, that means there was a green belt area outside the city, 2,000 amma large, limiknehem, ulikinyanam, for their cattle and for their possessions. Kashet siva shemet Moshe, as God commanded Moshe, Cain also b'nei Yisrael, so the children of Israel did, vayachal kuet haaretz, they divided the land. Let me just point out that one of the things that we discussed yesterday in the Chumash year was throughout Chumash, we really dealt with throughout Chumash, there are times when Ephraim precedes Menashe, and there are times when Menashe precedes Ephraim. In Parshat Vayechi, it is Yaakov who always puts Ephraim before Manasseh, though Ephraim is the younger and Manasseh is the older. And we sort of on the basis of something that is said by the Netziv, the Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, in his Perush Hamek Davar on Chumash, in a number of places, I'm going to say what it took me half an hour to say yesterday. I'll say it and just give you, encapsulate it for you, and it will be part of a shiur tonight in Harnov. Manasseh and Ephraim each had different characteristics. They had different strengths. Ephraim's strength was the power of intellect, mind. He was the Gadol BaTorah, and Manasseh was the one who had the ability to lead men. He was a statesman, he was a diplomat. As far as 2 feet on solid ground, that was Manasseh. Manasseh was a man of the world. Ephraim was a man of intellect. In the establishment of a state in Eretz Israel, we are going to find that Manasseh precedes Ephraim, because Manasseh represents the idea of establishing the framework, the tashtit, on which a society and a civilization can be built. Manasseh is the one who has the power of leadership, the talent to accomplish things, to get things done. And Ephraim is the one who, he's the man of intellect, he is mind. In Netziv says, who is it that is the favorite son, the one that represents Ephraim? The one who represents Ephraim is Yehoshua. Now Yehoshua was a great leader. He was a great commander-in-chief. But his true greatness lies in the fact that he was the one who received Torah from Moshe and transmitted it to all generations. Moshe kibel Torah misinai umesoro leYoshua. He receives Torah from Moshe and passes it on to Yeshua. He is the na'ar, the boy that we talked about, the young man who is mishardet at Moshe, who serves Moshe. Manasseh is represented by one of the judges, Gideon. Gideon wasn't a scholar. Gideon was not known for his intellect. Gideon was not a man of Torah. But Gideon was a man with tremendous abilities to lead. He represents Manasseh. In Sefer Yehoshua, nearly wherever we turn, we're going to find Manasseh preceding Ephraim. And here we have one of them, right over here in Pasuk, in Perek Yud Dalet. Pasuk Dalet, Ki Hoyu B'nei Yosef, Shnei Matot, Manasseh and Ephraim. Not what it says in Parashat Vayechi. All right, let's go further. Chapter 15 is also the description of how the land is being divided, precisely the cities that were given to Yehuda and to a number of the other tribes. Chapter 16 talks about the sons of Yosef receiving their portion in the land. And you will notice again here in chapter 16, by Yetzeh HaGoral of Yosef, Miyarden Yerecho Lemei Yericho Mizracha Hamidbar Olam Yericho Bahar Beit El. In other words, the Ephraim and Manasseh were in the area of yes, Beit El to Yericho, the entire area north of Yerushalayim up to Shechem and including Shechem. And take a look here in Pasuk Dalet again. Vayinchalu b'nei Yosef, Manasseh ve'Ephraim. Manasseh is before Ephraim. But what becomes even more fascinating is, even though the Pasuk says that b'nei Yosef, Manasseh and Ephraim inherited, and Manasseh is before Ephraim, when the Navi tells us what each one of them received, he begins with b'nei Ephraim first. Vayehi, the next pasuk is Vayehi Gevul b'nei Ephraim l'mishpachotam, and he goes on to describe precisely what the areas inhabited by b'nei Ephraim were. Now, first pasuk in chapter 17. The lot that was drawn by the tribe of Manasseh, Kihu Bechor Yosef. The precise same words appear in this week's Sedra. Kihu HaBechor. He is the firstborn. Which means that if there is, throughout Tanakh, we find this constant movement, either Ephraim before Manasseh or Manasseh before Ephraim, moments of greatness for Ephraim, and then we point out that even though now Manasseh is being listed second, but he is the firstborn. In terms of the ability to lead Klal Yisrael, Manasseh is the Bechor. All right. What I really want to do is move on to chapter 20. I got there. Chapter 20 is one of the most unusual, in a sense, one of the most unusual in Tanakh. Early on, I had pointed out the significance of the very first pasuk in this perek. Now we'll study the perek and see what makes it so unique and so unusual, and it therefore also becomes a way of understanding Sefer Yahushua in general. And I believe that there are ideas that are expressed in this perek that are extremely important for all of Tanakh. Vayedaber Hashem el Yahushua leimor, and God spoke to Yahushua, so saying. We had pointed out once, nowhere in all of Tanakh is there a pasuk that is structured like this. The only place you will have a pasuk like this is in Torah, repeated time and time again. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe leimor, and God spoke to Moshe, saying. In all of Tanakh, after Torah, the only place where we find a pasuk written like this is right here. Because this is the form, the structure of a pasuk that speaks of Torah being taught. In all the rest of the prophets, we're going to find Ko Amar Hashem. Yishayahu is going to say Ko Amar Hashem. So says God. Nu'um Hashem. But never a pasuk Vayedaber Hashem el Anavi Lemar. Why does this pasuk appear here? Because what's really going to happen is the completion and the fulfillment of a mitzvah that had been was begun in Torah is finished now. In that sense, as we have pointed out, the Gemara tells us that would Jews not have sinned, they would only have received Chamisha Chumshei Torah, the five Chumashim, and Sefer Yoshua. There would have been no need for any of the other Sifrei HaTanakh. All of the rest of the books of Tanakh are in response to the fact that Jews did not live up to the God's expectations, and therefore Jewish history develops in a way different than God had wanted it to develop. And therefore we have the responses of the Nevi'im to the failings of the Jewish people. But would they not have sinned? They still would have received Sefer Yoshua. Because, as we pointed out, Yoshua in nearly every respect is the completion and the fulfillment of that which was begun by Moshe. Who was the one that began the conquest of Eretz Yisrael? The conquest of Eretz Yisrael began with Moshe. He conquered the East Bank. Yahushua now completes it by conquering the West Bank. Who was the one that began dividing the land into portions to the tribes? That was Moshe, who gave the East Bank of the Jordan to 2.5 tribes. Yahushua completes and fulfills that by now giving it to another 9.5 of the tribes. There is another mitzvah that Moshe begins but doesn't complete, and the completion and fulfillment of that mitzvah comes here. What mitzvah are we talking about? Here we're going to have a perek, the one perek in all of Tanakh that it is like a parasha in Torah. No other perek in Tanakh is like it. Watch. Daber el b'nei Yisrael lemor, speak to the children of Israel, so saying. Also, a phrase that appears nowhere in all of Tanakh after here. T'nu lachem et orei ha-miklat, asher dibarti aleichem b'yad Moshe. I want you to set aside for yourselves the cities of refuge that I spoke to Moshe about. Lanus shama rotzeach, so that one who kills should flee there. Makei nevesh bishkoka, somebody who kills unintentionally without knowledge. V'hoyu lachem l'miklat, they shall be a source of refuge. Migoel hadam, from the avenger of the blood. A person who kills unintentionally. V'nosel achat me ha'arim ha'ele, he should flee to one of these cities. V'amad petach shar ha'ir, he should stand at the entrance to the gate of the city, and he should speak in the ears of the elders of that city his words. He should tell them, I've killed unintentionally, and I'm looking for refuge. I want to be safe here. They should gather him into the city, aleihem unto them. They give him a place, the yoshav imam, and he lives with them. And then, therefore, when the avenger pursues him, they should not hand the murderer over into his hands. Because he did it without intention. He didn't kill intentionally. He didn't hate the person whom he killed before this. The Yashav Ba'ir Hahi, and he should live in that city, Ad Omdolif Ne Ha'idal Mishpat, until he stands before the community for judgment. Ad Mot HaKohen HaGadol, until the death of the Kohen Gadol. Asher Yeh Ba'yamim Ha'im, who will be in those days. Oz Yashur HaRotzeach Uba Elido Ve'el Beito, then the murderer, remember we're talking about somebody who committed manslaughter, it was unintentional. Uva Elido Ve'el Beito, he should come to his city and to his home, El Ha'ir, to the city Asher Nos Misham, that he fled from there. Yes? Very good. Okay. We're going to talk now about all of the whole idea behind Rotzer B'Shogeg. What's the idea of Ir Miklat? Why does he remain there until the death of the Kohen Gadol? What did this Pasuk say? The Pasuk says that he stays in the city. Two things the Pasuk said. Until he is brought before the Sanhedrin for judgment, until the death of the Kohen Gadol, these are two things. What does the Pasuk mean? Why does this appear here in Tanakh? Why is this something that is completed by Yahushua? There are a lot of mysteries, a lot of things that have to be explained with regard to City of Refuge. And the important thing is, why of all mitzvahs, an entire chapter in Tanakh dealing with this halacha? A lot of other mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz, a lot of other mitzvot that are dependent on the land. We don't have a parasha about truma, maisa. Now watch. I just want to finish the chapter. Vayagdishu et kedesh bagalil ba'arnif naftali, that Shechem Bahar Ephraim, that Kiryat Arba Yichefron Bahar Yehuda. Moshe had designated three cities on the other side of the Jordan that are going to be listed in the next pasuk. Moshe had designated them before he died. Now that Yeshua has conquered the land, they designate the other three, and the other three are Kedesh in the Galil, Shechem in Har Ephraim, and Kiryat Arba which is Hebron. On the east side of the Jordan, Natnu Betzer Bamidbar, Bamishoni Matei Ruvain, Ramot Bagilad Mimatei Gad, Ve'ed Golan Babashan Mimatei Menashe. North, the north, the center of the country, and the south. Elu Hayu Arei Hamuada, these were cities that were designated L'chol B'nei Yisrael, for all of the children of Israel, V'lager Agod Etocham, and for the one who lives in their midst, Lanus Shama, that they should flee there. Kol Makei Nevesh Bishgaga, whoever kills unintentionally, Velo Yamud Begat Yad Goel Hadam, Adam Do Lifnei Ha'ida, he shall not die in the hands of the Goel Adam before he is brought Lifnei Ha'ida, before the community. And Eida, here, it's mentioned twice, Eida means the Sanhedrin. Right. Now we can start talking. Yes?
Once more, repeat the mitzvahs which were completed by Yehoshua
conquest of the land, Kibush Haaretz. Kibush Haaretz, Nachalat Haaretz. In other words, to conquer, to give it as an inheritance, and now comes Ori Miklat. There's a lot to be said about Ori Miklat, and it's extremely important within the context of Sefer Yehoshua. First of all, I believe what's most significant about this is for years now, Jews have been at war. They've really had to shed a great deal of blood. You know what can happen? What can happen is a sense of human life just being a little less valuable than they had assumed earlier. Before they had come into Eretz Yisrael, before they began the great campaign for the conquest of East Bank and West Bank, 40 years in the Midbar, Jews had not shed blood at all. Didn't wage war. Here it is. They've now gone through 7 extremely bloody years. These were years during which there was a mitzvah of Lo Techaya Kol Neshama, not to leave anyone alive, to destroy and wipe out the inhabitants of the land. I believe that there's a place for real concern that human life just loses a little bit of the sanctity, yes, value, like new. So never, so something happened. So another person died. Just add it to the other numbers. What the Torah wants to point out is the sanctity, the infinite value of every human life. And they've got to learn it now, after the major campaign, 31 kings and their lands destroyed. Klal Yisrael has to relearn the value of human life. What's the whole parasha of Rotzeach B'Shogeg all about? Take a look at what happens over there. There's something very fascinating. Man kills unintentionally. It was a mistake. It was a very costly mistake, but a mistake nevertheless. All right. What does the halacha require? The halacha requires that he flees to one of the cities of refuge. And as it's pointed out over here, even more clearly than in Torah, it says that he stands at the gate of the city and he asks the elders, permit me to enter the city. I'm fleeing from the avenger. How long does he remain after his first flight to the city of refuge? Does he remain there? No. He remains there only, as the Pasuk says, until he is brought for trial. Pasuk Vav, V'yoshav bo'ir ha'hi, he remains in that city ad omdo lifnei ha'edal ha'mishpat, until he is brought to trial. Which means he's now going to have to be brought to trial, and the halacha is he is brought to trial at the place where the killing occurred. That means like this. Man kills unintentionally, has to flee to the city of refuge. That's journey one. During the course of that journey, his life is in grave danger. Because in the event that a member of the family is going to kill him during the course of that flight to safety, he is held innocent, not guilty. All right. Second journey. He now returns to the city of the scene of the crime, and he's going to be standing there before the bar of justice. But more than that, in the event that the decision of the Sanhedrin is that this was indeed unintentional, he makes a third journey back to the city of refuge to remain there until the death of the Kohen Gadol. One of the Mefarshim asks, why these three journeys? Do you understand? Each journey, his life is in danger. He steps out of the city of refuge, his life is in danger. In the city of refuge, the Goel Hadam, the avenger, has no right to kill him. Only outside the city. One step outside the city and his life is in danger. And it's fascinating. The Mishnah says that after he stands before the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin decides that he has killed unintentionally, they send him back to the city of refuge. Ushnei Talmidei Chachamim Sholchimito, they send two Talmidei Chachamim with him. And these Talmidei Chachamim, their task is that if the avenger is going to come and kill, so they should tell the avenger, listen, he didn't mean it. It was unintentional. Why didn't the Sanhedrin send, instead of two Talmidei Chachamim, in other words, two Ephraims, you know what they should do? They should send two Menashes with Uzis. Two Menashes with Uzis would do a much better job, most probably, than two Ephraims with a Shas and a Rambam. But that's not what the halacha is. The halacha is that you send him with two Talmidei Chachamim. You know what the reason behind all of this is? Somebody killed unintentionally. I have to understand, by killing unintentionally, the Gemara tells us there are three possibilities. One possibility is that it was an accident. An accident meaning that it was so unusual, it was not the kind of thing that a person could ever have thought about in advance. No way that the person who killed could even have protected himself from it. Then there is absolute negligence. The person is completely negligent. Didn't intend to kill somebody, but the negligence is so horrible that it's considered as nearly akin to have killed in premeditated fashion. Between the two extremes of an absolute accident and total negligence is the fine line that is called Rotzeach B'Shogeg, one who kills unintentionally. And he is the only one that can find forgiveness by spending years in the city of refuge. The one who killed completely accidentally, there the Gemara says he is in no need of any kind of forgiveness. It was a complete accident. There's not any negligence on his part. The one who is completely negligent, he will not even be forgiven by virtue of the fact that he's going to be in a city of refuge. The one who finds forgiveness in the city of refuge is the one who someplace there in the middle, it was unintentional, he really didn't mean to kill it, it wasn't premeditated. A little bit more zehichot, he would have been a little bit more careful, it wouldn't have happened. You know what the Torah wants to teach him? The Torah wants to teach him what the price of negligence is. And you know how the Torah is going to teach it? Three times, no less than three times, he's going to have to make a journey that is fraught with absolute danger for him. Every journey, the first flight to the city of refuge, the second where he returns to stand trial, the third where he returns from trial to the city of refuge, each one of those journeys are journeys where his life hangs by a thread. There is no better way, no better way to impress upon somebody the price that you pay for negligence. It's a Gemara, and Rashi brings it in Chumash Vayikra, isn't it? Fascinating halachas of all. It says, Gemara tells us, Tochin l'cho haderech, the Pasuk in Pasha in Sefer Bamidbar says, Tochin l'cho haderech, you have to prepare the roads. The roads leading to all of the cities of refuge have to be well-paved roads. And the Gemara says, Miklot, miklot, hayakatuv al parashat drachim. At every crossroads, there was a sign with an arrow. This is the halacha. You have to have a sign with an arrow leading to the city of refuge. Now, we see it in all of our buildings. You know, you go into a building and you'll see a sign, Miklat, with an arrow. The halacha was that in all of Eretz Yisrael, at every crossroads, there had to be a sign telling you which is the direction to the city of refuge. Miklot, miklot hayakatuv al parashat drachim. It means the following. Obviously, what the halacha had in mind is that the one who has killed unintentionally should be able to make his way to the city of refuge without any kind of hold up. Nothing should stop him. The worst thing, of course, that could happen is if he would have to ask directions. Och and vey, if he has to ask directions. We know already. Yashar, Yemina, Smola, Shantishal. We can't leave him in that position. So the halacha was Miklot Hayakatuv al Prashat Rachim. Every Prashat Rachim in Eretz Yisrael had to have Miklot. It's a famous vort from Rabbi Yisrael Salanta who asked the following. Take a look at this. In the unusual circumstances when a person may have killed unintentionally, we have to make sure that every road and highway and byway of Eretz Yisrael had a sign on it saying which way is the closest Ir Miklot. 3 times a year, every Jew in Eretz Yisrael had to go to Yerushalayim Ola Regel for Pesach, Shuas, and Sukkot, and there is no halacha that says Yerushalayim should be written on every parashat Drachim. Why shouldn't the halacha tell us that a Jew wants to fulfill a mitzvah and go to Yerushalayim, he should have no difficulty, and that at every crossroads he should say, there it is, highway number one leading to Yerushalayim. The halacha does not require. So Rabbi Saul Salanta said, somebody was killed unintentionally. This is Chilul Hashem. There's a desecration of God's name. Something terrible has happened. It's a terrible thing. This is not the kind of thing that we want should receive great pirsum. This is not the kind of thing that everybody has to know. Terrible thing has happened. Let him flee quietly in the dark of night under the cover of secrecy and silence until he arrives at his city of refuge. What about Jews? Millions of Jews beginning to leave their homes a few days before Pesach in order to go to Yerushalayim. What we're talking about over here is great Kiddush Hashem, sanctification of God's name. Sanctification of God's name? So you know what the halacha wanted? Yes! Jew doesn't know how to get to Yerushalayim. He'll stop into the first pass station on the way down from the Galil and he'll ask him how to get to Yerushalayim. And he'll give him, hopefully, the correct direction. Listen, why are you going to Yerushalayim? What do you mean, why am I going to Yerushalayim? I'm going to Yerushalayim, Pesach is coming. There's a mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. And before you know it, throughout all of Eretz Yisrael, from all corners of Eretz Yisrael, Jews are driving, Jews are asking questions, how do I get to Yerushalayim? Millions of Jews asking how you get to Yerushalayim. That's Kiddush Hashem. That's the sanctification of God's name. There is a magnificent medrash that I once learned with you. The medrash at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. Magnificent medrash. Where the medrash says, in the times of Eli, Hophni, and Pinchas, when the Mishkan was in Shiloh, Jews had stopped coming to Shiloh. Along came a man by the name of Elkanah, who had two wives, one was Hannah and one was Penina. And Elkanah, 1 year, he took his family on the great journey to Shiloh. And what he did was, he came with his family and they encamped in the middle of a city, in the middle of a town, in the city square. People asked him, what are you doing, Elkanah? Where are you going? Why are you camping in the middle of in the street? So he'd say, I'm going to Shiloh. Maybe you'll come with me. Their eyes would begin to tear. And they would go with him. And the Medrash goes on to describe how the route that he took 1 year, he did not take the next year. Every year, a different route through different towns, villages, hamlets, kfarim, moshavim, arim, until the Medrash says, all of Israel was ola regel for Yontif. The Medrash ends by saying, hola madato, from here you learn, shebizchut, bischab, Elkanah. The reward for Elkanah was a child, Shmuel. Shmuel, who was accepted by all of Israel from another. Shmuel is really going to be, after Yahushua, 300 years later, Shmuel is going to be the first one who's going to rise to the stature nearly of Yahushua, in the sense that he will be accepted by all of Israel. Following the death of Yahushua, Yahushua is now Zaken Bar Bayamim, there isn't going to be another leader with the stature of Yahushua until Shmuel. There are going to be local leaders, there are going to be people who are going to be the leaders of Klal Yisrael for a a limited period of time. But no single person about whom it will say, as it says about Shmuel, that Kol Yisrael Midom Ba'ad Be'er Sheva knew that Shmuel was Navi Lashem. So here, that's how Rabbi Yisrael Salanter explains that for the Chilul Hashem of somebody who was killed unintentionally, there, every crossroads had to have signs leading to the cities of refuge. Not so with regard to Aliyah L'Degel Yerushalayim. There are a number of other problems we have to deal with over here. As far as cities of refuge are concerned, what is so special about the Kohen Gadol? Why is it that he remains incarcerated until the death of the Kohen Gadol? What does the Kohen Gadol have to do with all of this? And then you know what? There's something else that's very fascinating. It means that everybody is going to have, in a sense, a different sentence. It may be that one person is going to flee to a city of refuge because he has killed unintentionally, and a few months or a year later, the Kohen Gadol is going to die. Somebody else may flee to a city of refuge, and the Kohen Gadol is going to be Marech Yomim. I just want to read the Sifri and a Rashi, and that's going to bring us back to another idea that we had a whole shiur on which this idea was expressed. And you know what you're going to find over here? Again, the same theme. Watch, you'll see in a moment. Some of you will recognize it immediately. Rebbe Meir Omer. Rebbe Meir says, Rotzeach mekatzer yomav shel odam. A killer is the one who shortens the life of man. The Kohen Gadol Ma'arich Yamav Shaladan. The Kohen Gadol is the one who extends the life of man. Rebbe Omer, Rotzeach Metameyat Haaretz, the one who kills, makes impure and unclean, he desecrates the land. The Kohen Gadol Godain, the high priest, is the one who causes that the divine presence should be Al ha'adam ba'aretz, on man in Eretz Yisrael. Ein b'din, it's not right. Sheyehei mi shemetamei et ha'aretz, lifnei mi shegorem lahashrot et hashchina al adam ba'aretz. Not right. It's not right, and we have to explain this. That here on the one hand, we have the one who shortens the life of man, brings desecration upon the land, and on the other hand, we have the Kohen Gadol, who extends the life of men and brings the divine presence to bear. What is it that I'm referring to when I said that we've already discussed a similar idea? Earlier in Yahushua, you will recall there was an unusual pasuk. The pasuk said that Yahushua took all of Israel to Har Gerizim and Har Ebal, and he built a mizbeach of stone upon which no metal had been used. Why did that have to be told to us? So I brought you back to the parish at the end of Yitro, where it says that if you make a mizbeach of stone, you're not permitted to cut or hew the stones with metal. And we learned the Rashi at the end of Parashat Yitro, where Rashi says, Barzel nivra lekatzer yom av shalodam. Metal was created to shorten the life of man. And the Mizbeach was Nivra, the Mizbeach was created to lengthen the life of man. And I pointed out there that the reason why, I believe the reason why in Sefer Yoshua we are told that he made an altar out of stone and used no metal on it was again, and that was before the two major campaigns. What Yeshua, the messenger Yeshua, wanted to get across the Klal Yisrael, you're going to go to war, you're going to kill. But having to kill in battle should not dare turn you into killers. What was the great word that Golda Meir's great word? You knew I was going to say it. I said, my wife said, I take a look, she knew I was going to say it. It just occurred to me. Golda Meir's great word. She said, someday I may forgive Arabs for having killed Jewish sons and daughters, but I will never forgive them for having forced our people to kill.
There are times that you have to kill in battle. But killing in battle, Torah was always concerned, it should not turn a person into a killer.
Therefore, at the beginning of Yahushua, before the two major campaigns, we are told that he makes a mizbeach out of stone. He could have made another kind of mizbeach, but he made one out of stone and was careful not to use any metal in order to get the message across that Barzel is mekatzer yom haShalom, and the mizbeach, the purpose of the mizbeach is to lengthen the life of man. The whole parasha of Rotzeach b'Shogeg, and most specifically the idea of the contrast between the killer and the Kohen Gadol. The one who has killed, albeit unintentionally, but he has killed. He is the antithesis of Kohen Gadol. What Chazal really are telling us is that this person who, through some degree of negligence, the price for his negligence was the loss of human life, he, in a sense, needs to be tempered and moderated by the power of Kohen Gadol. And more than that, I'll take you one step further. And with this one step further, that's really going to be all of chapter 21. The Levim come to Yahushua and they say, we were promised by Moshe cities. There's a parasha in Torah at the end of Bamidbar that says the Levim are not going to get a share in the land, but they're going to be given 42 cities throughout Eretz Yisrael. Not only 42 cities, it's going to be 42 plus 6. The six cities of refuge are cities that are going to be given to the Levim. The Levim, Torah says, are going to have a total of 48 cities. What's fascinating, this is all in Parashat Maaseh. Someday, if you look through Parashat Maaseh, you'll see Parashat Maaseh talks about the journey of Jews through the 40 years in the desert. Then comes a parasha where God delineates clearly the map of Eretz Yisrael. What is Eretz Yisrael? Who is it going to be given to? How should it be divided? It's a fascinating parasha. Precisely what Eretz Yisrael looks like. The borders from south to north, east to west. That's parasha 1. The parasha that comes immediately after that is says, but the Levim are not going to receive a portion of the land. So you know what you do with the Levim? You're going to give them 42 cities. And then the Torah goes on to say you're going to give them another 6 cities. Which are those 6 cities? The cities of refuge. The next parasha in Maaseh is the parasha of one who kills unintentionally. As a matter of fact, the halacha is the following. All of the 48 cities that the Levim lived in were cities of refuge. There weren't really only six cities of refuge. There were 48 cities of refuge. Every one of the cities of the Levim became cities of refuge. The halacha distinguishes between the 6 main cities of refuge and the other 42. The 6 cities of refuge are collate. That's the word that's used. They absorb the killer. They absorb him intentionally or unintentionally. Whether he knew that this was a city of refuge or he didn't know that it was a city of refuge, if he finds himself in any one of these six cities, he's safe. The other 42 cities, he's only safe in the event that he journeys there intentionally. It means that there were a lot of places in Eretz Yisrael where a person who had killed unintentionally was able to find refuge. Halacha also is, in the event that a person killed unintentionally while living in a city of refuge, what happens if he did it in Hebron? So there the halacha is, he's supposed to be gole, he goes to another neighborhood. Now he doesn't leave the city of refuge, but he has to, in a sense, uproot himself. Maybe at this point, it's important to know, well, what was so significant, what was the meaning of a person uprooting himself? Why is golos
Why is Golos the way that Torah deals with somebody who was killed unintentionally? The Sefer HaChinuch says the following. He says, first of all, it was important for him to be in a city together with Levium. What were the Levium? What was the power of the Levium and the power of the Kohanim? The Levium, Moshe Rabbeinu said about them, Yoru Mishpatecho LeYakov V'Toratcha LeYisrael, the teachers of Torah, the teachers of Klal Yisrael, Shevet Levi. More than that, we may also add to that the fact that Levi was an unusual example of what a person can do with all sorts of bents and inclinations. What was Levi to begin with? Levi was together with Shimon, they're the ones who went in and massacred the city of Shechem. What did Levi do with that intensity of his nationalism? What did he do with it? He channeled and used that anger that Yaakov Avinu talks about, Orur Apom Ki Oz Ve'evratam Ki Kashata, the terrible anger and the fury of Shimon and Levi. Levi was the one who was able to harness that fury, that wrath, and that anger, and use it only for positive purposes. And therefore, who are the ones that joined Moshe in destroying the ones who worshipped the Egel? That was Levi. Yes, Pinchas is the one who kills Zimri, and of all things, Pinchas is from Shevet Levi. He's a Kohen from Shevet Levi, and Zimri ben Solu is from Shimon. One place where there's a struggle between Levi and Shimon. Levi, therefore, is the one who, at one point in his life, may have been irresponsible, but he was able to take all of that anger and wrath that made him irresponsible and harness it for the good. Is there any better example to be shown to a person who has killed unintentionally? The Chinuch goes on to say that Shevet Levi were people of tremendous personality and character and piety, and that this therefore would be something for him to learn. To learn from them. And more than that, you know what Torah wanted? Torah wanted that the person who had killed unintentionally should not remain in the presence of members of the family of the deceased. He would always be a reminder of the terrible tragedy. Every time they would see him, he would remind them of the terrible tragedy. Remove him, send him elsewhere. And of course, overall, the idea of Golos meaning, in this sense, moving from one place to the next, is something that humbles man. It's something that we all know, that how difficult it is to move from one place to another. A person comes to a new place, and in the old place everybody knew me. You come someplace, nobody knows you, nobody cares about you. It can take months until the mailman knows who you are. It will only take weeks until the makolet knows who you are. But here you come from a place where everything was familiar and people knew you, and then you come to a place where nobody knows you. I remember and incidentally, it's not only moving to Eretz Yisrael. I remember when I moved from Toronto to New York. You understand? In Toronto, the bank manager knew me. Here I come into New York, doesn't know me, and I give him a Canadian check. He doesn't even know what Canadian money is. We were penniless for 3 weeks until finally a check was able to... we have complaints against Israeli banks. That's not true. Whatever. One moves from one place to the next. We know what happens. A person becomes a zero. And you know what? When you become a zero, then you start moving up again, restructuring your life. Torah wanted that the person who had killed unintentionally should go through the destructive and then the constructive process of Golos. Yes?
I wanted to ask if you go into a Elisha if he found the murderer.
What we're going to do is the following. We're going to talk about Goel Adam. I'm not going to do justice to the idea of Goel Adam. I think this is extremely important. We have to know the meaning of Goel Adam. We still have to talk about Kohen Gadol. And we're going to have to deal with one other question. And yes, Hashem, we could leave it Gesundheit for next week. The one other question is, take a look, as far as Torah is concerned, there were 6 cities of refuge, right? Later, they added the 42 cities of the Levium. There were 3 on one side of the Jordan, 3 on the other side of the Jordan. Famous question that the Gemara asks, 2.5 tribes need 3 cities, and 9.5 tribes, 3 cities? How does it work? What did you want to ask? So, were there women in the Ari Miklat? In what respect? What do you mean women? If a woman killed unintentionally, yeah, as far as all negative commandments are concerned, in other words, any issa that a person has done, men and women are all the same. You've come a long way. The only difference between men and women in Torah is about 8 or 9 positive commandments. All the rest of the 613, it's all the same. How many misses are there that women are not obligated to fulfill? A handful, 2 handfuls, that's all. Sure. And of course, a person's family was able to move with him there. More than that, the Gemara says, Talmid Shegola, a Talmid, a student who goes into exile, his Rebbe has to go there to teach him. And a Rosh Yeshiva who goes into exile, his Yeshiva goes in to Golas with him. Yes, go ahead.
Was there another mitzvah that was fulfilled under Yeshua was
Har Grizim and Har Ego? You're right. Okay, good that you mentioned it. So in that sense, all of Sefer Yeshua becomes the complement, the fulfillment of Torah. Moshe, Yeshua, in that sense, is really the alter ego of Moshe. As we've quoted the Gemara a number of times, Pnei Moshe, the face of Moshe was Pnei Chama, the face of the sun. Pnei Yeshua, the face of Yeshua, was the moon. Yeshua was a reflection, a fulfillment, a completion of everything that Moshe had begun. And therefore, in that sense, Sefer Yeshua is akin to Torah. Yes?
I don't think you dealt with the fact that the number of years that they would be in the...
We have... Very good. So you're going to... you know what? I'll give the answer to that too. One of the Rishonim says that the answer to that question is it means that everybody may have to stay in the city of refuge for a different period of time. Somebody may really technically be there no more than an hour, the Kohen Gadol dies. So he says, because in every case of unintentional murder, they're all different. No two are ever the same. There are so many fine degrees of so-called negligence. The only one who knows this is the Rebbeinu Shalom himself. And therefore, a judgment that we could never make, the Rebbeinu Shalom is capable of making that judgment. And he knows which one is one who needs to be longer in the Ir Miklat, which one needs to be less. I don't know, as I'm saying it right now, what occurs to me is, you know what? Somebody kills unintentionally, it may mean, therefore, that the Kohen Gadol is going to live longer. What happens? Somebody kills unintentionally, and this fellow killed unintentionally, and he needs to stay for a longer period of time in the city of refuge, because there was a greater degree of negligence, so the Kohen Gadol is going to have to live longer. Or the opposite. Why did I think of the better part and you thought of the... I thought of the positive part and you thought about the negative part. The only thing is, in each one there's a negative and a positive. Because he stays longer in the city of refuge, it's bad for him, but it's good for the kind God of. Yes, I'm going... Yeah, yes, go ahead. Who? Why are you asking this? I don't want to answer the question until I know why you want it. Why you're... The question, was there any connection between the Kohen Gadol and the Sanhedrin? No, I don't like these kind of questions that are leading questions, and then when I'll answer it, all of a sudden you'll tell me... Listen, the Sanhedrin was quartered at Harabayit.
The Sanhedrin, the Lishkat HaKasid, was near the Mizbeach. So in that sense, there was a...
Geographically,
but more than that. In other words, the purpose of both of them was to bring peace in Eretz Yisrael. L'ha'arich yamav shel adam. Yes.
I think psychologically it's difficult. Why? Because the person who is supposed to flee to the Miklat is literally praying for the Kohen Godan to die, because he may have uprooted himself from his family.
Therefore, the Gemara says that the mothers of the Kohanim Gedolim would bring gifts to the people who were in the city of refuge, so that they should not pray for the death of their son. All right. In general, in the whole parasha of Ir Miklat, there are a lot of powerful ideas, and I'll try and sum them all up by next week. We've done part of them. We'll do the rest in the next week.